Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice, talk show host, coming soon, irradiated male. I just love technology. I do. And economic advancement and prowess. I mean, the terrorists have anthrax. All right, they have anthrax. That's a naturally occurring bacteria that can be weaponized so that it can be used as to attack people. And what we are doing is we're going to irradiate the male the same way we irradiate hamburger right now. We have technology we use in this country that I've supported all along. You have environmental extremists who are upset that we're killing bacteria in our foods that can make us ill or kill us. So they're upset about that. But what we do is we fire beams of electrons at nearly the speed of light at meat and other foods. We also use this to with medical equipment, to sterilize medical equipment. So we fire these beams of light, beams of electrons at nearly the speed of light, and they break up the DNA of bacteria. And so these electrons, of course, they can penetrate envelopes and even packaging that our postal service ships. And so what the post office is doing is installing these devices at their regional mail sorting locations, so that it'll be in line as part of their mail delivery process, and for at least as long as necessary, will irradiate our mail. That'll kill anthrax. The beam of electrons, it doesn't know anthrax from any other bacteria. Maybe it'll think it's Salmonella or E. coli. It'll just kill it. Now, maybe I shouldn't quite say that, because I think we need about 10 times as much radiation to sterilize an envelope with hardy anthrax spores in it as you need to sterilize a hamburger patty. So it might take more, a higher dose. But, you know, you become an expert on the weirdest things in difficult times. And we now know that you can irradiate 40,000 pounds of hamburger in an hour and a half. 40,000 pounds of hamburger in an hour and a half. So how long will it take to irradiate 40,000 letters from anthrax? If your concern is anthrax spores. Well, I'm not sure. And obviously it adds to the cost of mail delivery. But it's neat when we live in a country that has the economic prowess and the technological advancement that we can defend ourselves from our enemies in this and other ways. But we shouldn't lose fact, we shouldn't lose sight of the ultimate reality that true security does not come from stopping people, from making it so that they cannot hurt you. True security comes from deterrence, making it so they don't want to hurt you. They will not hurt you because they're afraid of the consequence. What does the Bible say? What does the Bible delegate? What does God delegate? What kind of responsibility to the governing authorities in a case like dealing with a terrorist? What does God teach? What does he command? What does he order in the book of Romans, chapter 13, that the governing authority should do to a terrorist? Well, I think the word used is terrorize them. You terrorize the terrorist. That's what you do. And people are afraid. They're saying, oh, but if we kill these Islamic extremists are willing to kill themselves. And if we strike back at them, we'll just raise up more in their place. Kill Osama, you'll have 10 Osamas. Kill Muhammad Atta, you'll have 10 Muhammad Attas. Well, he's already in hell, but whoever's taking his place. But in World War II, we had Japanese kamikazes, and they were going to kill us. They were willing to die to kill themselves for the chance of killing Americans. And so what would the World War II generation have done if someone said, hey, you know, if we kill some of these Japanese soldiers, they got kamikazes over there, they'll raise up more who want to kill us. What would the World War II generation have said? They would have said, and we'll kill them too. That's one thing that we Americans can agree wholeheartedly on with the terrorist. If they want to die for their religion, we can oblige them. You want to die for your religion? Let's go at it. So we have to deter them. Now in Pakistan, according to media reports, a pro-Taliban group of armed Pakistani tribesmen has taken over an airstrip in Pakistan near the Afghan border. Oh, brother. And that's according to aviation officials there. So some Taliban-supporting, terrorist-supporting morons have taken over an airstrip. You know, you may have seen on television, in fact, you could have seen it on the front page of USA Today today, a picture of, I don't know how many men are in the picture, hundreds. On TV, you could see hundreds, and the reports of thousands of Taliban supporters, Islamic extremists, terrorist-supporting criminals who are in caravans heading to Kabul to join the Taliban in their battle against the U.S. Well, it bewilders me, and I'm afraid to think that we're allowing these convoys to get through. I mean, one of the things our Pentagon has said is Afghanistan, there are not a lot of valuable targets in Afghanistan. It's like stirring the rubble. Well, you got a convoy of guys with guns, rifles, 50, 80-year-old rifles. Some of them have swords and pitchforks, no, axes, swords and axes, I think I saw. Sword, they're taking swords to the battlefield. And so we should wipe out the entire convoy, any convoy that heads into Afghanistan of soldier wannabes should never make it to Kabul. I hope and pray that's what we're doing, but I'm afraid that we're not doing that. Now, in the Philippines, our president, George Bush, said this is a war against terrorism wherever we find it in the world, international terrorism. All right, well, in the Philippines, a bomb has gone off and killed five, and the Philippine military suspect that it's Abu Sayyaf. Now, that's a Osama bin Laden group. It's a Muslim extremist rebel group. And they don't like the fact that the Philippines is mostly Catholic. And so they say, we want a Muslim, an Islamic government in the southern Philippines. And we're going to keep killing people, especially Americans, if we could get them. They're holding an American missionary couple hostage right now. And as Doug McBurney's pointed out on Weekly Worldview, they threatened to behead the couple. And what this group does, Abu Sayyaf, and they're linked to Osama bin Laden, their leaders have been in Afghanistan training, and they have a common goal, a common enemy, America and Israel. And what they do to raise funds, because it costs a lot of money to run a terrorist group, what they do is they kidnap people for ransom. you know, Hollywood's taken to making movies about this, but it's true. That's what happens. So we've got the war is on many fronts, and there are Americans ready to die, more Americans ready to die in the Philippines from Islamic militant terrorists. And eight, in Palestine, you may have heard the tragedy that happened yesterday. Five Israeli women. Now, this is in the town of Hadera, northern Israel, between Jerusalem and the Sea of Galilee, but only it's on the coast, on the Mediterranean Sea. The Jewish town of Hadera, five women and about 30 were injured, but five women at a bus stop were gunned down and killed. And now, thankfully, there were Israeli detectives who were nearby when the shooting started, and they shot back. They killed the gunmen, thankfully. But there's a 16-year-old girl, Eleanor Rosarin, 16 years old. She's waiting at the bus stop. Now, this is 7 miles from the West Bank. You know, Israel is such a small country. It's the size of New Jersey. And you take this huge chunk out of it, which is the West Bank, and you leave Israel this skinny little band of land that an Arab attack, one of their goals would be to cut Israel in two so that the South cannot resupply the North and cut off the Golan Heights and the Galilee. And Seth, just what a mess. Well, at any rate, this 16-year-old girl says, there were two girls next to me. I started to run when I heard the shooting. And one of the girls was hit, and the other ran to help her, and they shot her as well. What a tragedy. And so I heard a debate on National Public Radio today, NPR Radio today, with a Jew and a Palestinian from Israel, and they were talking about what is the definition of a terrorist. Because the Palestinians and in Pakistan, like Al Jazeera television, you know how they refer to these murderers who killed five women, five girls and women, and injured 30 others? You know how they refer to them? As martyrs. They refer to them as martyrs and as freedom fighters. And the Jew and the Palestinian were talking on NPR, and NPR was moderating, but clearly, in my estimation, giving the upper hand to the Palestinian. But the question was, what is a terrorist? And the Palestinian used the cliche, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Oh, we can hear all that. We can hear all that. That sounded good. I hope those are bumps coming up later in the show. All right. And one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. You lying dog. You're not a freedom fighter if your primary target is women and children. That's what distinguishes a terrorist from a soldier. If you're fighting for freedom for your country, you don't put in your sights, you don't target, especially, primarily, significantly, women and children. If they're casualties, that's a tragedy. How long do your trumpet blows? It takes us out of sight. We need the truth, but the world doesn't care. They can't see this, I know it's everywhere. No absolutes, and they're absolutely sure. They worship. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our number 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. But yeah, if your target is women and children, as happened in this Christian church in Pakistan. Sunday morning, Muslim extremists break into a church as they just finished their final hymn. They said amen. And they break in and they shoot about 400 rounds. They killed 16 people, including women and children, a minister, women and children, young kids. They're in front of the gunmen, shoot them dead. That's a terrorist. And those are the people that we're at war with. And I pray that we have the courage to do what it takes to win the war. You can't possibly stop every potential crime like that all over the world. But, you know, Japan had a lot of people willing to die in order to kill Americans. And as God promised in the Bible, if your punishment is severe and swift, then you will deter them. And we hit Japan so hard that it's been a half a century and they haven't even thought about attacking anyone. Not that they haven't done it, not that they've constrained themselves, they haven't even thought about it. And they were putting much of the world at risk for their military aggression. And they've become a virtual pacifist country. So yeah, God is right, and you could deter the enemy if you punish them ferociously enough. Now, let's go to the phones. And we'll start in Wisconsin, way up north in Wisconsin, right? What's this? Wow, we're going way up north in Wisconsin. Wait a minute. Wyoming. Oh, Buffalo, Wyoming. Cece, speak your mind.
Hello, Pastor Bob.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you.
Pastor Bob, it's so good to talk to you. I have wanted to talk to you for a long, long time.
Well, I'm thrilled you got through, Cece.
Well, thank you.
What's
I just
on
want
your
you
mind?
To know there's just a few things I'd like to say. My husband and I have been following you and learning from your teachings for many, many years now. As a matter of fact, I don't think I can remember exactly the first year, but to help to put a date on it, I'm thinking about Amy's call.
Oh, my.
I'm thinking it was a homosexual call that you invited to live with you.
Oh, Terry Johnston.
Okay, so I don't know how long ago that was.
He was in Tennessee.
Okay, and you invited him to come live with
you. Well, to come to our church and come out to Colorado, and I really didn't know where he would live, but I said, Terry, come on out. My wife Cheryl and I will send you the money to come out. And because he became a Christian on the show.
Right.
You remember that, Cece.
I do.
You know, so many of our critics say that that Bob and Yart Live, the ministry we have, will prevents homosexuals from getting saved.
Well, I don't believe that for at all. I have videos of you from back then, Bob.
Yeah, and you know what? The homosexuals that got saved on the air were one part. But I had the privilege of praying with a number off the air and meeting them, and even some leading homosexual activists who wanted to get together to talk about God. And I got to pray with a number. And guess what, Cece? Just maybe 6 weeks ago or so, and this is an example because the TV show's been off the air for 3 years now.
Okay.
But almost every month, the last one I could think of in the top of my head is about six weeks ago, a pro-lifer in Denver, Colorado at Planned Parenthood saw a gal halfway down the block who seemed to be, you know, watching the pro-lifers, and she went and talked to this gal. And it turns out the gal was a lesbian who became a Christian. She used to watch my show.
Oh, my.
And one of the first things this gal said to my pro-life friend is, well, I don't want that Bob Enyard to know I was a lesbian because he'll be mad at me. And what a trip. You know, homosexuals got addicted to the show.
Yeah.
And many of them got saved. But we weren't tolerant, and we didn't let them think that we would accept them in their perversion. And it worked. We were hard with them. And it worked.
Well, Bob, we sure appreciate every single thing you do, and we appreciate your teaching. And we appreciate the way you go about teaching. You know, my husband and I have been were saved about 7 years ago.
Wow.
And I think we kind of caught on to your show pretty close to right after we were saved.
Right.
And we appreciated the way you came across. And we like, I guess you could call it sort of a tough love approach.
Yeah, sure, it's a tough
it's
love
the
approach.
The truth, and we were searching for the truth, Bob, and when we heard it, we knew we had found it.
Well, I'm so excited to hear from you, Cece.
And now we have, what I want to tell you is we have a lot of your tapes. We bought the Bible study, the monthly Bible study.
All right.
And we also bought the plot, and that has helped me because I am not what you would call a very good reader.
All right.
And comprehension is a little tough for me, but the plot has actually given me that overview, quote unquote, exactly right.
The overview of the Bible.
Yes, sir.
So that you could understand the point of the whole Bible and the books in the Bible.
It's been a blessing, Bob.
Wow.
And you know, just this last spring now, we've had, my husband's mother is 91 years old.
All right.
And she came to live with us back in 95, and she lived with us for about 4 years.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
And she had, well, and she has dementia.
Oh, boy, that makes it really difficult.
And we felt that we could not help her anymore, so we brought her to the local nursing care center here.
Oh, we talk about that once in a while.
And she was in there for about a year and a half. Now, I'll tie all this together here in just a sec. Last spring,
right.
I was painting the inside rooms of my house,
mm-hmm.
and I decided to listen to Bob Enyart. So I pulled out my little recorder, and I put on Timothy, and I was listening through Timothy, Timothy.
So our first Timothy Bible study album.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. And I was listening to One Timothy 5 was about where I was,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about the way to treat widows and elders, and also you started talking about nursing homes and family taking care of each other. And
right.
Now this is my mother-in-law, so I was feeling like I had been relieved of a duty for that year and a half, but when I heard your words and you were speaking the word of God.
Mm.
I really believe that the Holy Spirit convicted me and softened my heart.
Oh, Cece.
And you know, the funny thing, my husband was not here, so I had to repeat that to him. And I actually went through, well, should I say something to him? But I was so convicted, I could not have kept that to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And probably 2 months later, 3 months later, we brought Mom back home.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear
and
that, Cece.
And we want to thank you, Bob, for this, because I'll tell you what, it's been very tough, but we have a peace. That passes all understanding.
Oh.
We have God's peace now. And I'm not saying, you know, that we are better than anyone, but it's been a real blessing for us. And God worked through you, through your words and your conviction to help us.
Cece, I'm so thrilled to hear this. It, you know, God says, honor your mother and your father. And our government with our socialist system says you could put your mother or father in an institution rather than care for them. And I've been in nursing homes all around the country, and it's worse than jail. It's worse than prison. And I've spent, I don't know how many hours, but hundreds of hours in nursing homes, and my wife worked in a nursing home for a long period of time. Between us, we know what they're like. I was involved in ministries in nursing homes, involved here in Denver in getting an elderly woman out of a nursing home when she felt that she was put in jail and given a life sentence, even though she was not guilty of any crime. And to her family's chagrin and dismay, and her son's getting angry at us, we worked to get her to help her escape, and she escaped.
Oh, that's fantastic, Bob.
Yeah, and so, wow, I am really thrilled to hear this, Cece.
Well, I want to, you know, and we're beholden to you. We really are, and we're beholden to the Lord that our hearts were softened.
Hmm.
And we have her here, and we have our days, I have to say.
Of course it's
but,
hard.
You know, we are thankful, and we have that peace. And I'll tell you what, you cannot exchange the peace that we have for any other thing.
Oh.
It's just an amazing thing. I can't even explain it to you.
Wow.
And, you know, my husband is here, and he would like to say something to you also.
Well,
if
I'm thrilled.
Do you have time to say hello to Gary?
I would love to.
All right, Bob. And I wanted to just one more thing say is that you and your family are welcome here anytime. Our house is open to you.
Well, thank you.
If you ever need to land or if you never need a place to stay or even a cup of coffee, we're here.
Thank you.
We would love to visit.
Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you, Bob.
So much. I appreciate that, Cece. From
Gary.
Buffalo, Wyoming. And now this is Cece's husband, Gary.
Hi, Pastor Bob.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Well, listen, Cece's run down just about everything. Our community here in Wyoming basically has the God version 6.0 in full force.
I see. The nicer than God mentality.
And, oh, my, you just don't confront anyone.
Mm.
And this is something I learned from you. My pastor, we're pretty good friends, and he's a good man, but he calls me, I call a spade, he says.
Right.
And, you know.
What would he call it?
I do.
Now, and what would he call one?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a heart sometime.
Bastard, what would you call a spade? A heart, right.
But we just both want to thank you from the bottom of our heart for your teaching. Again, Cece says you have a way of teaching, and that I understand thoroughly. I mean, you don't beat around the bush, and I appreciate that.
Mm.
And it's just been marvelous. I don't know where we would be today without a closet full of your videos and tapes.
Okay.
I'm serious when I say that. I'm saying it from the heart. We don't have towels and things in our closets anymore.
Yeah.
We have Bob Enyard tapes.
You're too much, Gary.
And it's wonderful.
Hey, I'm going to give you an hour to cut this out.
Well, I just miss your TV program so much. We've had one of your videos on earlier. I'm glad you lost your mustache, but that's...
That was an improvement, huh? You know, my wife and my mother ganged up on me.
Oh,
it was a conspiracy.
Yeah. And when they're happy, everyone's happy.
That's
huh?
right. That's
so
right.
So I don't want to take any more of your time. We just appreciate everything you're doing. I want to call you Rabbi because you are my teacher. I just cherish that.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Gary, I appreciate it to no end. We need that kind of encouragement, and God bless you.
When are you coming to Johnson County?
Well, if we have opportunity to drive by, we'll stop in.
Well, give us a call. I could raise up an audience for you.
Well, I appreciate that. Hey,
absolutely.
Hey, you never know. We, Gary, just to take that thought a little further, I just did a seminar in Decatur, Alabama. That's a pretty small town.
Uh-huh.
And we had a wonderfully successful seminar because of the couple that hosted the seminar really worked to get people out, and they made it happen. So if you and your wife or anyone listening around the country, if they'd like to put on a seminar and we could talk about the topic, whether it's Bible-related, current events, criminal justice, terrorism, whatever issue that we cover, it's very possible we could do it.
Well, we'll run some numbers. I'd love to do it.
All right.
Like I say, I could get you a standing room only on audience.
Well, let's talk about it, and please call our number, and we'd love to chat about it with you. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you.
Good
what night. What a neat call, and boy, I appreciate that. All right. Yeah, I would have given him an hour to cut that out. I mean, we're planning on getting back on the radio in South Bend, Indiana as a test to see if we could begin to market Bob Enyard Live around the country. And yeah, it's good to hear from people that whose lives were changed and who are reaching out to others in a ministry to a mom, an elderly mom. That's really neat. Hey, before we get back to more on the war on terrorism, Thailand, real quick. I love this story. Thailand is cracking down on beggars with a new campaign that portrays street people as able-bodied charlatans pretending to be handicapped. And they're asking for the public's help. The government is saying, "We are begging you to stop giving." That is so cool. And they talk about, the government talks about the millions of dollars a year the beggars take. And they show hidden cameras of beggars begging for money and eating better than the average person in Thailand. And one beggar they got an interview with was bragging about how much money he could make. He says he could work on a farm for 65 cents a day, or he can beg and make $115 a day by working only during the rush hour. So that's pretty good. That motivates people not to work and become a charlatan, a fraud, a scam artist. And, you know, those kind of people, then they don't work all day and they beg in the rush hour. And so then what do they do all day? Well, what are you going to do with yourself? Well, you're in Thailand. You could do hashish, I guess. You do drugs. You become an alcoholic. You destroy your life. But you got liberals who feel good because they gave you money. And so they make themselves feel good. Even if it's going to kill you, they don't care because they feel good about it. And the command in the Bible, when Paul writes, he writes, this is a command, those who do not work shall not eat. It's a command. And we have Christians in the homeless business who live like Del Maxfield, the director of the Denver Rescue Mission. I had him on my radio show in studio. And I showed him that verse, he who does not work shall not eat. And Paul says it's a command. And he says, well, I'm not prepared to discuss that. I said, Del, you've been in this ministry for 25 years, your whole life. You're not prepared? When will you be prepared to discuss the one command that's directed exactly at you and your ministry? Well, I'm not prepared to discuss that. Well, that's pretty good. I guess that's a handy, Bill Clinton should use that line. So we had the 16 Christians murdered in Pakistan. So we'll get back to the war on terrorism. And Pakistan is like other Arab countries, has seen a lot of religious violence, but usually between Arabs, Arab on Arab, Sunni versus Shiite, you know, violence. But wholesale slaughter of Christians, that's somewhat new. We had it a couple weeks ago in Africa, and now we've got it in Pakistan, 16 dead. So the president, Pervez Musharraf, Pakistan's Musharraf, said he will track down the culprits and bring them to justice. He says they were trained terrorists bent upon creating discord in Pakistan, where Christians and Muslims have lived in peace with respect for one another and for centuries. You know, in Pakistan, only what percentage of the people in Pakistan are Christian? Well, according to reports, about 1%. And they have about 150 million people in Pakistan. Now, what if you asked a public school student, all right, they have 150 million people and 1% of them are Christians. So how many Christians live in Pakistan? Well, I was at a football game on Saturday. One of the families in our church have a young son, Marcus, and he played football, and what positions did he play? He was wide receiver and defensive end and second string quarterback, and he's a neat, really neat kid. And there's a bake sale to raise money for a party for the team. I guess because they did well, they were 1-7, I think, for the season. Ooh, that's not too good, I guess. Maybe it was 7-1. No, it was 1-7. Anyway, they have a bake sale, and here's a family working the bake sale, and here now not our church family, but another family, a daughter, teenage daughter, about mid-teens. She's selling sandwiches. She's selling cookies, and she has to add up 75 cents times two. She's holding the cookie. She's looking at it. And she has to ask the adult, what's that, 75 and 75? And somebody, after a moment, sort of whispered, $1.50. Yeah, but the problem was then it was $1.75 plus $1.75. She couldn't figure it out. Because she should have said, what is $1.75 plus $1.75? Then she would have got the answer, $3.50. But she was stuck just when she thought of the 75s. So she said, what's 75 plus 75? $1.50. Then she's looking at these $2.75 oversized chocolate chip cookies. She doesn't know what to do about it. What a tragedy. So they wouldn't know. If 1% of 150 million people are Christian, they wouldn't know. 15,000 is 1.5 billion. They wouldn't know. They'd have no idea. That's the way it is in America. Ask some kid how many seconds are in 4 minutes. It's just tragic what's going on. Where's Pakistan? You know how many American kids will think Pakistan is a city next to Hoboken, New Jersey? If you showed them a map with Hoboken and Pakistan in New Jersey, they'd believe you. Well, the Christians, most of the Christians in Pakistan were Hindus. Remember the untouchables, the lowest caste of the Hindus? That wonderful religion that treated people as untouchables. That religion where they worship cow dung and the mothers put the cow dung on their heads and the kids die of malnutrition because they let the cows eat the food in the gardens because the cows are their gods or something stupid thing like that. And they can't eat the cows and they let the cows eat the food and the kids die because of the sick religion. You know, what holds people in misery and enslavement in this world is their false religions and their false philosophies. Ideas have consequences. So anyway, 1% of Pakistan is Christian. There's a... Wow. If these few examples begin to multiply... Now, according to Reuters, I don't know if it's true. They quoted an anonymous witnesses who said that the terrorist shouted, Allah Akbar, which means God is great in Arabic. And they said, Pakistan and Afghanistan, graveyard of Christians. And they said, this is just a start. Boy, that sounds like the anthrax letter. This is just a start. What's next? This is next. So anyway, what a mess. Now, Pakistan has a good number of Islamic extremists within their government and within their military. And Pakistan has a military leader, General Musharraf. And it was a coup, but a bloodless coup that he took over the government recently, a few years ago. And there are quite a few Muslims... extremist Muslims in his military. And so we're afraid that Pakistan, if the extremists could topple their government and take control of the government of Pakistan, we're afraid that Pakistan has nuclear weapons that could fall into the hands of Taliban supporters and terrorists. How's that one? So we do have contingency plans. According to the London Telegraph, special report out today, October 29th, 2001. And it's this, that we have one of Israel's most trusted anti-terrorist units here in the U.S. Now picture this, one of Israel's anti-terrorist units, the Israeli government, working in the U.S. with the Pentagon, with our special forces, with a special forces unit, and this is what they are on standby for. If the Pakistani government falls and Musharraf is killed or removed from power and Islamic forces take control of the government, well, the fear is that they'll then get control of the warheads, the nuclear warheads that are in Pakistan. That's one of the reasons that we don't like it when these backward countries go nuclear. They've got 24 nuclear warheads in Pakistan. And so the CIA, of course, is worried about Pakistani army officials who are sympathetic to the Taliban. And if they pose a threat to General Musharraf, then what in the world could happen if Osama bin Laden could get his hand on one of these nukes? One or more. You know, they put one in a boat and floated it out into the Gulf out there. Just who knows what could happen, obviously. That terrorism goes to a new level when they've got nuclear weapons. So we have an elite American military unit preparing for a possible incursion into Pakistan in order to steal their nuclear weapons, to steal their arsenal, if Musharraf falls. Now, this is pretty interesting. This is Israel's Unit 262. Now, during times of crisis, all kinds of rumors fly. But this report in the London Telegraph today comes from a journalist, Seymour Hersh, who has been very accurate in his reporting since the terrorist attack on September 11th. And so he's got it that Israel's Unit 262 came to America soon after September 11th, and they've been training with our special forces. And, you know, some in the media are speculating, well, even if we're going to steal their warheads, we wouldn't even know where they are. It's doubtful we know where Pakistan keeps their warheads, which, by the way, they first tested back in 1998. But I would think that Musharraf might be willing to tell George Bush where their nukes are. I think so. Because Musharraf knows that his very life, certainly his control of the government, but his life is now in George Bush's hand, because he would not publicly support us unless we guarantee to him that we will not stop until we destroy Osama bin Laden. Because if we bomb them for a couple months and then left with our tail between our legs, Osama would kill Musharraf without any doubt as payback, and to warn all the Arab governments in the Middle East, don't you dare ally yourself with America ever again, or you're dead. And that's why we can't back out. It doesn't matter what the cost is. Bush had to give his word, and rightly so. And so Musharraf he needs Bush. And if Bush is wise, he certainly has the cards. He could play it. He certainly could tell Musharraf, we need to know where your warheads are. We need it. We need the plans for the buildings. We need the locations. We need the details. And hopefully we have it. I don't know. We don't always do what we need to do or should do or ought to do. Police sharpshooter has killed a robbery suspect. This is in New Orleans. He fatally shot a robbery suspect who walked outside a house with an assault rifle to a woman's head. 22-year-old attempted murderer, robber, is now dead. And the police were also looking for the dead guy's brother and a third suspect. They were wanted in a string of armed robberies. And the brother surrendered shortly after his sibling was killed. And a 17-year-old Gregory Matthews was still at large at press time. So, and the police, now check this out. The police don't know whether the woman in the house was pretending to be a hostage or if she was an actual legitimate hostage. And there was a second woman in the house that may have been used in the same way. So how's that? This punk criminal gets his girlfriend and says, hey, come on, help me escape. Let me hold this gun to your head. Yeah, we'll trick him. They walk outside of the house and a sharpshooter puts a bullet through the criminal's head. Praise the Lord. Praise God. Good news in America. And not only that, in New Orleans. Good news in New Orleans, which for a year or two there had they had the national title. They took the national title, not the Super Bowl. The murder rate. They had the highest murder rate in the country. It was the murder capital of the country. And our country was the murder capital of the world. So they were really doing it up there for a while. You know what we should do? We should see if we could get the name of this police sharpshooter. And on our Denver Bible Church letterhead, we should have a letter we send to law enforcement people who are heroes. And, you know, because there's so much confusion in the world about what's right, what's wrong, self-defense, what does the Bible say? Does it say, love your neighbor, forgive, turn the other cheek, don't judge, don't, you know, let God take vengeance? Well, if it says all those things, then this guy's wrong. Shouldn't have done this. He should apologize. He should repent. He's in trouble. No, he's a hero. And it's because people misuse the Bible and take God out of context. When he says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay, and I will delegate the authority to governments for them to bring vengeance, wrath, and terror against evildoers. So this guy, as a duly authorized governing official, had authority from God to kill Joseph Ridu. Had authority from God to kill him. And he exercised that authority. So we should send a letter, just a one-page letter, outlining the basic Christian principles of self-defense and thanking and honoring the sharpshooter. If anybody out there knows who this guy is, because we have listeners down in New Orleans, if you know who this guy is, you could email us at kgovlive@aol.com, or you could send us a mail. Now, we get hundreds, zillions of emails, and it's very hard to get through all the garbage to find the important emails. So if you ever have something you need to send to us that's really important, like here, I have an email, gays find a home in Bush's party. Okay, that's an interesting little story by the Associated Press, but it's obviously not life or death for us. We know the Bush White House has bent over backwards to appease the homos. We know that. Okay, fine. And so here's another story that points it out. Fine. But if you have something especially important, mail it to us. Mail it to me, Bob Enyart, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. Please do. Please, please mail that to us. We'll be thrilled. Okay, now, let's see. So I'm going to, you know what I'm going to, I'm not going to throw that article out. I'm going to rip it out of the newspaper. There, see that? And I'm going to put it right in Al. Al, here, take this article. Now on TV, this looks funny because you're just putting it right into the computer. Thank you, Al. All right, hey, look at this. I just ripped a page in half, and the thing that showed up on the top, a headline, most lawyers would not represent terrorists. Those lying dogs. Any lawyer in the country would salivate over the opportunity of representing a terrorist. Instantly nationally famous. They represent murderers and rapists, kidnappers, child molesters. And they fight for adulterers and alcoholics to get custody of kids after divorces. They're lying dog lawyers. Lawyer means liar. That's what the word means. Hey, on this show, in fact, the last show we did was called what? Armed Drones? Well, big story out today, USA Today today, about our unmanned aircraft. And I told you that this was the first time we've ever had an armed drone, and we did. We did. Now, some of the media is saying we didn't. We didn't have an armed drone, but we did. We had a Predator. Now, we have two primary drones, airplanes, the Global Hawk and the Predator and Predator B. And these two very different aircraft. The Predator is a lot smaller. It's 27 feet long, and it could fly up to 25,000 feet. But the Global Hawk is 44 feet long, so it's longer, but its wingspan is way more than twice the span of the Predator. It's 116-foot wingspan, and it could fly up to 65,000 feet. Now, that's high, right? A Boeing 737 could fly at about 40,000 feet. So this unmanned drone could fly up to 65,000 feet. And guess how far it could fly without refueling? Now, a 737 could fly about 3,000 miles, about cross-country almost. A U-2 spy plane, that could fly more than 3,000 miles. This unmanned drone, the Global Hawk, that can go 65,000 feet up in the air, fly over 12,000 miles without refueling. That's cool. And it's loaded with avionics and wireless data transmitters and digital imaging gear. All state-of-the-art stuff. And it could end up being Osama bin Laden's worst nightmare. But not really, because we're just getting into this. It was only this past February when we first tested, we fastened a Hellfire laser-guided missile to a Predator, under the belly of a Predator, and we launched it, and it struck. It was a successful test. We hit an Army tank in the Nevada desert. That's cool. And apparently, the Afghan moderate who was just killed by the Taliban, the guy named Haq, he needed help. He was not on a CIA mission. He was sort of doing his own thing. And a lot of people are criticizing the government for not supporting him from the get-go, but he was getting in trouble, but he wasn't on one of our missions, so we sent in a Predator with a Hellfire missile on it. But it's too late. The guy was dead. So anyway, and we don't have a lot of these things. We have Predators. We have 31 of them. That's it, 31. I don't know how many Global Hawks we have, but we're only ordering a few a year. And what some military analysts are thinking is we should perhaps build not an armada of these things. That would be unmanned boats. But we should build an air force of these unmanned drones and arm the Predators. They're, I think, more flexible and they fly lower and they cost less. And the Global Hawks, you put them up over a country. And, you know, it's pretty helpful when you have the intelligence, when you know what the enemy's doing, when you could watch them, your forces are multiplied in how effective they can be. And we've got streaming video on these things. Streaming video and snapshot images. So you got with the Predator, you got the pilot. You know where the pilot sits? They don't have a pilot. The pilot sits in a van 400 miles away with a joystick. And he's flying on his computer screen. It's like Microsoft Flight Simulator. And now we're going to have a target button where he pushes the button on the joystick and fires a Hellfire missile for $50,000. Now that's virtual reality. That's cool. So the problem with our military is traditionally when we get intelligence, let's in the previous wars we fought, we get intelligence, and it used to take days for the intelligence to get work its way up and back down the chain of command to where we can order a strike. And more recently, they've gotten it down to maybe hours. But what they're hoping that this operation in Afghanistan can do for us is it provides a theater in which we can get the expertise to go to minutes. In a matter of minutes, based on fresh intelligence data, we can make tactical decisions and target and fire. Cool. That is cool. That is really cool. And that's what technological progress and economic prowess can do for you. You could develop stuff like this, and we should. And we should continue this. All right. Now, hey, did you hear about the pharmacist down in Delray Beach in Florida? Or just a town away from Boca Raton where the terrorists live? He said that he had a guy. He said that it was Ada. You know the terrorist Ada? What was that terrorist's first name? Maybe my studio audience knows. That terrorist Ada. What was his first name? Oh, yeah. Muhammad. What a stupid question, Muhammad. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, Muhammad Ada was in his store seeking medication for his hands, which were raw. How about that? Pretty interesting. All right, and this just in, American women who are volunteering for military duty in Afghanistan against the Taliban. They're saying, hey, we've survived the water diet, the protein diet, the carbohydrate diet, and the grapefruit diet in gyms and saunas across America, and we never lost a pound. We can easily survive months in Afghanistan with no food at all. Let us at them. Let us at those terrorists. And they say, we've spent years tracking down our husbands in hardware stores and sporting events. Finding bin Laden in a cave will prove no problem. And uniting all the warring tribes of Afghanistan in a new government? Oh, please. We've planned the seating arrangements for in-laws and extended families at weddings and Thanksgiving dinners for years. We understand tribal warfare. Let us at them. That's pretty good. That came from my wife, Cheryl. Thank you, honey, my associate producer. So, we're out of town. Oh, no. We're talking about the Fed going to cut another half point off the interest rate. And Kandahar, it's a ghost town. And, how many Muslims are in the U.S. anyway? Estimates vary between 1.5 million and 12 million. Hey, that's it. We're out of time. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.